This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Author Lawrence Scanlon's latest book, A Year of Living Generously, dispatches from the front lines of philanthropy and has been described as inspiring and riveting in its honesty. The book describes the author's experiences during a year-long involvement in charitable causes, both close to home and as far away as Senegal and Costa Rica. A Year of Living Generously offers a whole new understanding of what it means to give to others.
And we're joined on the phone by Lawrence Scanlon. Welcome to People First Radio, Lawrence.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Lawrence, let's start with what might be the obvious and the first question. What led you to write this book? Why spend a year personally experiencing and bringing your journalistic expertise to the concept of charity?
Well, it is the obvious question. What happened is, 6 years ago, my mother died. She died of brain cancer, and she was quite an extraordinary woman. She was a pediatric nurse and then a geriatric nurse all her life. She had 8 children. I was the first. And when she died, the family debated ways to honor her memory. We eventually came up with the idea of a nursing scholarship at the University of Toronto. And of course, a few years later, I noticed that a very rich man, a financier, a mining mogul, had donated $10 million to the same school of nursing. So it occurred to me that something was going on. There was generosity happening on a scale that we have never seen on this planet. I think of the Warren Gates and Bill Buffett Foundation, which I think is something in the order of $70 billion. It's the largest charitable foundation that the world has ever seen. So clearly there was something going on, and I decided I was going to investigate it.
So you took a family interest in philanthropy and took it a step further, and you became a frontline volunteer of sorts.
Mm-hmm. So my challenge, and I wrestled with this for a long time, was how to frame this thing. It's one thing to say I'm going to go about being generous for a year, but exactly what would you do? So my idea was to come up with 12 different charities, spend a month volunteering for each one, and then write about the experience. Who would I meet? What would I be thinking at the end that I wasn't thinking at the beginning? Was I changed in any way? The big question for me is, how do we close the gap between people like Buffett and Gates and people on the so-called bottom of the scale? How do we bridge that gap? Because it struck me that it keeps on getting bigger.
You spent your first month of 2008 at St. Vincent de Paul Society's Loretta Hospitality Center in Kingston, Ontario, which is your hometown.
Right.
You received some advice before beginning, and that was, do not assume, do not judge, do not accuse, do not patronize. Tell us more about your experience at Vinny's, as it's commonly called.
Well, Vinny's I live in a city that has a street that runs kind of like a great divide. It's called Princess Street. And if you live south of Princess Street, you are deemed to be somebody with money, with education. You probably teach at Queen's or went to Queen's. You're reasonably well off. And if you live north of Kingston, well, then you're poor. Now, these are grotesque exaggerations, but there is some truth to the stereotype that if you live north of Princess, then you're not doing as well as if you lived south of Princess. So Vinny's, as local people call it, it's a hot lunch program, and the people who come there are very, very poor. They are living on often medical disabilities, typically earning or getting from the government about $12,000, $10,000 a year. So really kind of starvation wages. They might have enough to afford a fairly lousy apartment, but they certainly don't have enough money for food. So they come to programs like Vinny's to get a decent hot lunch. And what struck me about Vinny's is there was one woman who worked there. Her name is Selma, an amazing woman of mixed ancestry, Aboriginal, French, Scottish, Irish. And she herself is on a disability pension. But she works at Vinny's every day that Vinny's is open, and during most of the year it's open 5 days a week. So Thelma goes there at 8:30. She helps prepare the food. She serves the food. She says the grace before the meal. She really is kind of, I called her the mother superior of Vinny's. And I guess what I learned from my time there was a real sympathy for people who must have their hand out all the time and who must eat at Vinny's. It's a terrible thing to have your hand out all the time. And some of these people, or I would say virtually all of these people, do not deserve to be eating at Vinny's. They've had some hard luck. You know, I think of the joke that Jim Hightower, he's a social activist in Texas, tells about George Bush. He says, and in his best Texas accent, he says, you know, George Bush, he talks like he just hit a home run. The guy was born on third base. So, you know, I'm talking to you from an island 2 hours north of Toronto and a beautiful lake. I'm here because a friend of mine is generous enough to share this island with me and my friends. But I didn't earn this place on the island, and George Bush didn't earn his wealth either. So, and neither did people who are forced to eat at Vinny's earn their poverty. They had some bad luck, and it is amazing how people can get out of the terrible merry-go-round that they're on with just a little bit of help and a little bit of dignity and a little bit of compassion.
Now, Lawrence, as you mentioned, you spent time in different nonprofit organizations through each month of that year. And if we fast forward just a little bit from January to June, you spent time on the front lines of philanthropy with the John Howard Society, also right. in Kingston,
right.
A city which has 9 prisons and over 2,600 inmates. Now, Chris Cobb of the Ottawa Citizen, in his review of your book, calls that chapter one of the most powerful in the book. You write of several men who have done serious time in prison, that they agree on 2 points that can make a difference: acts of kindness, having someone believe in you. Tell us more about that.
These are good questions, Kevin. Well, there was a man I met. This guy had been out. He had done serious time. He was a lifer, so he did 20 years plus. And he met a psychologist in Collins Bay Penitentiary. And the psychologist said, you know, you are a smart man. I can tell you're a very intelligent person. I think you can get out of this terrible place that you're in if only you were to set some goals. Now, what are your goals? Give me 3 goals. So he said, well, I'd love to learn to play music. I'd love to learn to coach a sport. And I'd love to work with developmentally challenged people. So he did all of that. He learned to play the guitar. He learned a lot more about sports. He got a BA in sociology, all the while doing time inside. And when he got out, somebody took a chance on him, and for the last, I would say, 5 years, he has been working with challenged people, and he absolutely loves it. And he said this, and sort of a bunch of other people I talked to, if you can find even one person who will show you compassion and believe in you, it's amazing what can happen. I mean, it really struck me. First of all, prisons are really terrible places. There is an atmosphere of tension, crackling tension in these places. The people at John Howard Society warned me that at the end of my days, we were volunteering inside. We were setting up booths and helping people who were on their way out, helping them find a place to live, fixing up their resumes, getting ID, that sort of thing. And at the end of, and I think I spent about 4 or 5 days in various penitentiaries around and in Kingston. And at the end of each day, I was absolutely exhausted, and it was just from the tension. But I have to say, and you know, some of these places are full of some of them very nasty people, but the people I talked to were, they're just like us, you know. Once you, and this is, I think, one of the things that I learned in the book, is that when you spend time with people outside your circle, I spent time with transvestites in Costa Rica. I spent time with black people in West Africa. I grew up a white kid in Scarborough, in east of Toronto. Never had any black friends. So each of these 12 experiences took me outside of my comfort zone. And I was really struck by how much humanity is left with some people, even though they've been through terrible things. So, yeah, I mean, I live in Kingston, and I drive by those prisons all the time, but I'd never, aside from one brief experience about 20 years ago when I did some volunteering inside Millhaven, never been inside a prison before.
There's no one to beat you, no one to defeat you, except the thoughts of yourself feeling bad. Say many times that you're better than no one, no one is better than you. If you really believe that, you know you have nothing to win and nothing to lose.
You're listening to People First Radio. We're speaking with author Lawrence Scanlon about his recent book, A Year of Living Generously, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Philanthropy. The book describes 12 months spent volunteering inside a variety of Canadian and international charities and offers a personal understanding of what it means to give to others.
Lawrence, at the end of your year-long journey, your odyssey, as you described it, your radical sabbatical, as someone else put it, you write that you first did not feel changed in any fundamental way, but that later, upon reflection, you realized that you had indeed changed. Tell us more about your experiences after you completed that year.
Well, the one question that was asked of me, they asked this of my wife and I when we were in Costa Rica. We worked with an NGO in San Jose. It's a shelter for people, the desperately poor people who have HIV/AIDS in that country through selling their bodies because that's all they had to sell. The same thing was asked of us in West Africa when we taught at a radio station, a women's radio station in Senegal. The question they always asked of us was, will you remember us? Will you maintain contact with us? And I didn't know that I would. I have, to a certain extent. I think I wrote the book as a way of remembering. I didn't want those people to fade. So the book is full of names and stories and experiences. I wanted that radio station in Dakar, and I wanted that shelter in San Jose to come alive for people so that, and I list at the end of the book contact information for all of the 12 organizations I volunteered for. So I hope that I will maintain contact with them. I think the other thing that happened is that there was an anger. I found myself feeling angry at the end of the book that the status quo, there's a great deal of cheerleading that goes on when, and I'm not picking on rich people. There are a lot of very, very fine people who happen to have a lot of money. I think of Cecil Green, the man who developed Texas Instruments. He developed his fortune expressly to give it away. But there is a lot of backslapping that goes on when people with very deep pockets determine, usually at the end of their lives, that they're going to give away some of this money. And good on them. I'm glad that they're doing that. But clearly the status quo is not working. There are a lot of people suffering in this country and abroad. And there are a lot of people walking. You know, I thought of countries in the world where they approach it differently. I read study after study after study about human health and happiness, and the countries where people are most happy and most healthy on all kinds of parameters are the Scandinavian countries, where it so happens that the taxes are very high, but they don't have people starving on the streets. There are some people who, for their own reasons, would rather live on the street, but there are very, very few of them. Nothing like we have that I saw in downtown Toronto, that you would see in Vancouver, all across this country. People without proper housing, not eating well, dying way before their time. The one message that I got from all the people I talked to about homelessness in this country was they need housing. So that's the message of the book. We have to put pressure on governments to do more. It's not good enough that some of it's volunteer, it's not good enough, that people like Buffett and Gates and others give so generously. It's just not enough. We have to get governments back on board the way they used to back in the 30s and 40s with the New Deal. It used to be the case that, this government, our federal government, felt they had a responsibility for our citizens. They don't think that anymore, and I think we have to change their minds about that.
Lawrence Scanlon, we have just a moment left. Is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today?
I would say just read the book. It'd be nice if you bought it, but that's not necessary. Go to the library, read the book, see what I'm saying about what's going on in this country and elsewhere. And the other thing I want to say, Kevin, is I want to thank you for having me on your program. These were very good questions. You had clearly read the book. Not everybody who interviews me has read the book. So I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Yes, and Lawrence, I've enjoyed it very much. I haven't finished each of the months, I have to admit. But one thing that I found was very compelling, and I agree with the fellow that did the review of your book, that the portrayals of what you experienced in Canada were quite gripping for me.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I was shocked. I was gobsmacked is, I think, the best word. I had no idea that there was such poverty. And even in my own town, you really have to get outside your comfort zone, go and talk to people who are living way outside your, if you're in a position to. That's one thing you can do, is just do what June Collingwood said we should do, and that is when you put a loony in somebody's cup on the street, look them in the eye, give them some dignity, give them the time of day, which is what we don't give them normally. So, yeah, I've enjoyed this, Kevin. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Lawrence.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lawrence Scanlon has been a journalist for almost 40 years and has won numerous prizes for his writing, including 3 National Magazine Awards. Lawrence has also been involved in community service for the last 3 decades. His latest book, A Year of Living Generously, Dispatches from the Frontlines of Philanthropy, is currently available at bookstores across Canada.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centrist Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.